I wanted to see something in the Alpha Biuru. We have about 5 minutes, yeah? Okay. This on the Agadita that we covered yesterday. There was one Agadita about the sale of Haman. He sold himself as an Eved. That we more or less covered yesterday. But then there was another Agadita here, interpreting a pasuk in Yeshaya. Because the Gemara is bringing down a whole string of members here of Rabbi Lazar and the name Rabbi Chanina. So the first of those members here is Asin HaKadosh Baruch Hu Lios Adara B'Rosh Kol Tzadik V'Tzadik. That's what he derives from this pasuk in Yeshaya. So he says here, Yesh Levayer Mai HaTorah Hazu Shetia B'Rosh HaTzadikim L'Asid Lovo Sharei Lo Yitochen L'Faresh Esamayimar Kipshuto Shakarish Baruch Hu Atzmo Yia HaTorah Cholila. So if you take the Gemara literally, that Kosh Baruch is going to be an Atara Barosha Shal Tzadik, I mean, how could that possibly be? So to interpret this Agadita, he quotes the Gemara Brachas, Shat Tzadikim Liosid Lovo Tielehem Atara Barosha. And the Gemara says, Margol Bafumya de Rav. Rav used to say the following, Ha'olam Habba Ain bo lo achila v'lo shesia v'lo periferivia lo masomat lo kina lo sinav lo tacharus el tzadikim yoshvim v'ataroseim birasheim v'nehenim miziv hashchina. So Rav says that liosid lavo in olam haba, where there's no physical activities, the tzadikim are sitting and they have their crowns on their head, and the binena miziv hashchina. So this atara, this crown that Rav mentions, is the same atara that Rabbi Lazar mentions in our sugi that also HaKadosh Baruch Hu lios atara b'rosh kol tzadik v'tzadik. So the question is, what is this atara? By the way, gentlemen, if you want milk, I can offer you goat's milk.
No, I'm
just saying. My wife is kind enough to pick up some goat's milk for me, because I don't get around to it. Now, what is this whole business that Rav says in Masechet Brachos on Daf Yud Zayin, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu will at some point or other be like an Atara B'Rasheim, or the Tzadikim B'Yoshim Atarasayim B'Rasheim? So we have here a machlokus between the Rambam and the Ravid in Perek Ches Milchus Tshuva. What is this Olam Haba that Rav is speaking about? And that will reflect on this concept of Atara B'Rasheim. The Rambam Shita is that Olam Haba is called the Olam HaNeshamos. Olam Elov Milkachos HaNeshamos Liachar Ptirasa Min HaGuf. So the Guf is left here, and the Neshama goes to a world of Neshamos. Ubi Olam HaHu, in that world, Ein L'Tzadikim Guf, Elehem Kemalochei HaShoris. V'lachein omer Rav, ein bo achila v'lo shesia, v'lo chol dor ha'nitzach l'guf. So nothing that the body needs is going to be needed up there in the world of the neshamas. Al kein, according to the Rambam, therefore, e efshal lefarish shahatora sheta'ater oz esatzadik u'dom regashmi. You can't talk about a physical crown, kikeser, sherei ein shom guf. If there's no body, how could there be a crown? Elo, but rather atoroseim b'rasheim means das. It's some sort of a symbolic representation of a deeper kind of knowledge. Sheyedu, they'll understand, I guess, something about the life that they lived here on this world. Shebiglola, because of the various mitzvos, etc., that they accomplished here in this world. Zochu l'chai olam haba. And all his das they will have in the olam haba. V'hi hatorah shalahem. And that's what this hatorah is. The hatorah on the head means das, the symbolic representation of das. V'divru chachom loshem zu yoshvim hatorah barosh tzadik. Even though, if you take this language literally, they're sitting there with crowns on top of their heads, you'll get confused because ain't shom guf. According to the Rambam, you're talking about olam haneshama, so there's no guf. So what does it mean, Yoshev, he's sitting, or yesh lo rosh, he has a head, with an atar barosho. But this is all derech chida u'mashal. So it's all a metaphor for this kind of das that they will achieve in olam haba. However, the Ravid disagrees with the Rambam, and his understanding is that we're talking about olam haba, which is the olam ha'asid li'asid lavo, which means the world after tchiyas hamesim, achri shiyabdu atzadikim begufam ubelmalbusham. Umasha omru einbo achilu shesia hareyesh po guf. How can they subsist without eating if they're guf? Sheyeh gufam chazak ubari ki guf shel mala shuzach v'eino tzorach achilu shesia. I would add two footnotes here. Footnote number one, I think he's referring to Moshe Rabbeinu on Har Sinai. You know, Moshe goes up to the mountain for 40 days, he doesn't eat, he doesn't sleep. It's a different kind of a goof. And the second point I would make is that Rabbeinu Bachai and the Rabban also are of the opinion that after Tchiyas HaMeisim, the body itself is going to live forever. So obviously it's a different kind of body. It's no longer a body that depends upon food. Im Kain, according to the Ravid, HaTorah ain't a mashal. The word HaTorah here in this context, the crown, is not referring to some sort of metaphoric representation. Elohi kipshuto ukimashmo. You can take it literally. Keser shel kavod, shiyah barosh hatzadikim. Because again, they're physical entities, and therefore they can wear these crowns. Each tzaddik will be adorned with a crown. And that which it says here in the Gemara that HaKadosh Baruch Hu will be the Atarah, the implication is that God will place the Atarah on their heads. Let's just see if we could add one more paragraph. The Gemara goes on, Rav Losser goes on to darshan this pasuk in Yishayahu, and after describing the tzaddik, he says, Yochol lakol. Would God's reward be for every single tzaddik? What about a tzaddik who's misgoyer, who's guilty of conceit? And Rashi says that the Gemara is yochol lakol. There was a havamin to say that the Shechina would be shore, would mashra Shechina b'shrosha shal tzaddik, even though he's misgoyer. And that's why the Gemara is going to derive an exclusion. So all the mafarshim go up in arms here. How can you possibly say that there was a havamin that because the tzaddik is good in whatever he's good at, and he's accomplished whatever merits he has, therefore Hashem will be mashu shechina on the head of the tzaddik, even though he's a balgaiva? After all, we have a famous statement of Rabbi Yochanan in the name of Shimon bar Yochai, kolam sheish bo gasus ruach is ka'ovid avodah zara. Rabbi Yochanan himself says he's kekofer be'ikar. There are other interpretations that of his guys, like he's Baal Arayos Kula. These are very severe averis here. So how is it possible that there be Hashras Hashkina on this HaTorah with a person who's a Baal Gaiva, he's guilty of such severe sins?
Is he guilty of one or guilty of all of them?
Different opinions. In other words, Rabbi Yochanan, in the name of Rabbi Shimon Yochai, says he's guilty of Avodah Zarah. Rabbi Yochanan himself says he's guilty of being kofar v'ikar. And I think it's Rabbi Chia who says he's guilty of Baal Arayah. So I don't know if you combine all the two, or each one is focusing on a different element of gaiva.
I mean, each individual one is a heavy enough burden.
That's right.
Without
you don't need the other one. But we come back to square one. So what was the hav meaning that HaKadosh Baruch Hu would put in HaTorah al Rosh HaShemstad that he's guilty of conceit of all these terrible avers? Is he called an Oser Ritzon HaShal HaKadosh Baruch Hu? Ubiaru, he gives like a summary of the Achronim, She'ena Kalvona al HaMizgoy Ma'ash.
I have cups for us.
Oh, wow. So we can't interpret the Hava Amina, you know, was a full-fledged Baal Gaiva, because such a person for sure, it goes without saying that he's not on that level that he could have Atar Barosha. Ella, we're talking about someone, he knows that he himself has limited Maisim Ruotim, he's Shafil B'Einov. He's very humble in his mindset, but nevertheless, he has a little bit of taste of gaiva, a flavor of gaiva, of conceit. Who choshev, he thinks, sheyigia elov bekochos atzma, that whatever he achieved in this world, he takes pride that he achieved through his own efforts, without any help from Hashem. V'ena tolo so bisarusa shahoy solo milamal. Again, on a philosophical level, he might agree with you that he needs all that God bestowed on him in order to achieve what he achieves in tzaddik. But at some subtle point in his psychology, in his path, in his emotion, he feels that he was the one who took the initiative. And that's already a little bit of guidance, because we have to believe that the initiative comes from above. That's what I wanted to add here. I was going to check this off. I remember that we did this.
So actually, before we go on, I just want to, for the coffee, we're going to have a bag and we're going to label it. That'll be the morning shiur. And only take cups and coffee from there, because they ran out of cups for Shabbat. And so these are their cups right now. So we're
okay, great.
We
so to,
we'll
right.
take our cups we'll, and our coffee.
We'll put up a sign of some sort so we'll know where the bag is. Yeah. So Rabbosai, let's go back to Daf Vav Amud Beis, where we got to yesterday. And let's see where we can pick it up. So we're up to the Pasuk. Vatamod b'chatzar beis hamelech pnimis. I think we got up to it, but maybe on second thought. We did get up to it? Okay. I forgot to make myself a little note. So before we spoke about the fact that the pasuk Vatilvash Esther Malchus, that the word Malchus is a secret code word for Ruach HaKodesh. Now, once she had this Ruach HaKodesh, it would seem that she's ready to go into the Beis HaMelech, to the Chatzar Beis HaMelech. But the funny part is that it doesn't say Vatelech, and she went to the Chatzar Beis HaMelech. It says Vata'amod. And the Gemara thinks that there's a word missing over here, that the Megillah deliberately omitted the word Vatelech Vata'amod. So what does it mean to say Vata'amod without Vatelech? How did she get there? Or why is she standing there? You know, the concept of standing there without going there to be there is a little bit odd. So apparently the Megillah is emphasizing that she's standing there. What does it mean she's standing there? So the Gemara thinks she's standing at the opening, at the entrance to the Chatzar Beis HaMelech, but she's hesitating. Something is holding her back. That's the Vatama. Vatelech would imply, you know, that she's full-fledged, actively going there. Om Rabbi Levi, since we said that Esther is no longer just plain Esther in a physical sense, she's also got the Ruach HaKodesh that surrounds her, that she's wearing, so to speak, the Ruach HaKodesh. So Reb Levi says, Kevin Shehigil Beis HaTzlamim. Now Reb Levi is assuming that the Chatzar Beis HaMelech, that the Megillah is referring to, is the Beis HaTzlamim, which means that's the Mokom Avodah Zarah v'Achashverosh. Now the Marsha goes back and forth, he's not sure, are there actual idols there in the Chatzar Beis HaMelech, or perhaps Achashverosh himself is an idol worshipper, and that's what Reb Levi says, Nistalka Heimena Shechina. So Vatamod here means that the Shechina, the Ruach HaKodesh, stops like dead in its tracks. I'm not willing to go into this place. This is not a place where... Now Esther desperately needs this Ruach HaKodesh to sort of to escort her, to accompany her while she goes into to plead the case in front of Achashverosh. And now she's really in angst because the Shechina refuses to go into that place. I'm not going to go into a place that's full of idols or come close to Achashverosh, who's such an idol worshiper, he's such a lowlife. The Amran, at this point, she, Esther, recites that, this is the 22nd chapter in Tehillim, if I remember correctly, Keli, Keli, Lama, Zavtoni. God, you've forsaken me, meaning now you're not willing to go into the Chatzar Beis HaMelech with me. And I don't know why. She wasn't aware of what was going on here. Shema, perhaps it's because she's willing to have a relationship with Achashverosh. Atadon, I'll add the word Osi, Atadon Osi, I'll Shoge Kemezit, Yal Onesi Ratzon. Maybe you'll be judging me, as far as my aver is concerned, as if I were guilty. Now, we discussed earlier, for those who may remember, that as far as her relationship with Mordechai is concerned, because she says Kasha Avodati Avodati, she can no longer resume that relationship because now she made a positive decision to have a relationship with Ahasuerus, so it's no longer onus. But nevertheless, even if you'll say the copy Baila, remember with regard to the Baal, we quoted the Marik, I don't want to go through it again now because we got to move on a little bit. But there was a pasuk in the parasha Nosam of Sot that says Umala Bama. So as far as Mordechai is concerned, that decision that she made for whatever reason is enough to be considered a Ma'al Be'ishla, as if she betrayed, so to speak, her husband. But as far as HaKadosh Baruch Hu is concerned, Lama Zavtoni, I'm not doing this willingly. This is not an Avera. I'm doing this for the sake of Klal Yisrael. So are you judging me as a Mezid? Are you judging me as if I'm guilty of an Avera? As far as my husband is concerned, I understand that I can't change the law. The law is if I've made this decision, I'm having this relationship, I can't go back to my husband. At least as far as the Shechina is concerned, as far as the Ruach HaKodesh is concerned, please judge me as an onus, as if these are mitigating circumstances beyond my control. And now she has another possibility, and this is going to tickle the mind of all the Mefarshim, why she feels guilty of this. Oh, or perhaps she says, Shema, the reason why Ruach HaKodesh is remaining outside and not accompanying me inside to the Beis Chatzar HaMelech is Al Karasiv Kelev, because I called Achashverosh a dog. Where did she call him a dog? Shenemar, in that same capital of Tehillim, Lama Zavtoni, it says, Hatzila Micherev Nafshi, save me from the sword that's about to destroy me, Umiyad Kelev Yechidasi, and from the dog himself who's after me. And who is this dog? This is Achashverosh. So I'm just going to give you one of the various interpretations of why she felt guilty of calling him a dog. He is a dog. He's worse than a dog. But nevertheless, Tzorach Lino Kavod B'Malchus, that there's an idea that we have to still have some honor for the king. We'll see this in Paro with regard to Moshe and Aaron and other cases throughout Tanakh. So once she made this declaration and she realized that she may have overstepped her bounds and violated the honor of the king, so immediately Chazra v'karatu Arye. So instead of calling him a dog, she calls him a lion. A lion is much more respectable. Shenemar, because in the same capital she says, Hoshi'eni, save me mipi Arye, from the mouth of the Arye. Now what the Gemara doesn't answer here, there's sort of like a little bit of an empty space here between this Gemara and the next Gemara, is what did HaKadosh Baruch Hu respond to her? Did he actually agree that he would go into the Beis HaTzlamim? Or is it possible that he said, you know, I can't go into the Beis HaTzlamim, but I'm with you anyway, in some sort of spiritual sense? In any event, the next pasuk says the following: "Vayhi kiros hamelech es Esther amalka." And imagine Esther is after 3 days of fasting. In and of herself, she may not have been the most beautiful woman in the world. We don't know about that. There are different opinions. If you remember, one opinion says she was green in her composure. That's why she's called Hadassah. Om Rabbi Yochanan Shloshim Alochi Ashares Nizdamu La Biosasha. She needs divine assistance. Echad shekbias tzavara. One of them is going to perk her up, so to speak. As instead of looking, in Yiddish we call it eingebeugt, bent over, you know. She stands straight and tall, and that makes her look more beautiful. Echad, according to, and another malach, achieves the following goal, shemosha chuchol chesed oleha. You know, it's a certain kind of an inner grace that would make her attractive. The echad in the third malach, shemasach es hasharvit. Now here's the deal. Let's go back to the case of Basya Bas Paro. If you remember, she sees the cradle floating on the top of the Nile, and according to Chazal, she couldn't reach it. The pasuk goes out of its way to say that she stretched out her arm, but it was incredible that she was able to reach the teva. And how did that happen? There was a great miracle. And the arm was able to reach out to a place that was very far away. Here too, the Shavit HaMelech, which would allow her to come closer, because you remember that there was a gzera that anyone who came too close would be, Achaz Dom Islamis would be killed. She couldn't reach the Shavit. But the third Malach stretched the Shavit in such a way that she could reach the Shavit. V'kama, and here we have about five different opinions as to how much of a stretch it was. The Shavit, let's say, was X in length. How much further did it go? So the first opinion is Omrav Yirmiya, Shtei Amos. There were two Amos. In other words, the Shavit itself was two Amos. I guess you'd call it, let's say, 24 inches or whatever it might be. Vehemido, the Malach, stretched it out Shtei Mesrei Amos. From two amos all the way six times over to 12 amos. Amri Leis Kuni's second opinion, al Sheish Yisrei, 16 amos. So then we're talking about multiplying it by 8. Amri Leis, a third opinion, says al Esrim V'Arba amos, 24 amos. And now the Gemara is going to go back to the case of Basya Bas Paro and make an equation between there and here. B'mas Nisa Tana, we have a Brisa that the Malach actually stretched the Sharvit 60 Amos, that's 30 times its size, Bechenat HaMotzi Ba'amos Shel Bas Paro, because we find in the same way that the arm of Bas Paro was extended miraculously 60 Amos. And the Marsha's whole discussion here about where the number 60 comes in and what it means. And now the Gemara is going to give us another example of a stretch of 60 am. V'chena tamotze b'shine rishon. So this is a reference to Og Melech HaBashan. Og Melech HaBashan lifted up a mountain which he was going to thrust onto Klal Yisrael. And a great miracle happened and the mountain fell on his own shoulders. How did that happen? So it seems that there were nemalim, there were ants that bore holes inside the mountain, and as a result he couldn't hold on to the mountain and the mountain falls on his own neck. Then he tries to shake off the mountain and somehow parts of his body get stuck in the mountain itself in such a way that he can't shake off the mountain. And one of the miracles that happened at that time is his ara chu sheinov, his shinayim, his teeth started extending to such an extent that it would hit up against the mountain and even penetrate into the holes of the mountain in such a way that he couldn't throw the mountain off because his teeth were piercing through the mountain. And how long were his teeth? Shishim Amah. That's not very long teeth for someone like Og Melech HaBashem, but for you and I, it's long teeth. Dichsiv, and the Gemara now applies a certain gematria. And the Pasuk says, in Tilim, Shinei Rishoyim Shibarta, you have broken the teeth of the evildoers. The Omer Reish Lakish, Al Tikre Shibarta El Hashem Rivavta. Rivavta means you extended it. You extended the teeth. But now we have the Gematria. You see, it says, Shinei Rishoyim Shibarta. Now it should have said, since it's a reference, Pasuk is referring to Og Melech HaBashem, it should have said, Shem Rasha Shibarta. So there's an extra Yud, another extra Yud, and another Mem. So if you add the 40 of Mem to the two extra Yuds, each one is 10, you end up with the number 60. And this indicates that the Shinei Rishoyim, you extended Shiravta for 60 full Amos. So it seems that 60 is the magic number here. Whenever HaKadosh Baruch Hu is pulling off a miracle of extending something, it's going to be 60 Amos. Rabba bar Ofran Omer Mishum Rabbi Eliezer Sheshama Mirabo Mirabo Mirabo, that the Sharvit and the arm of Basparo and also the teeth of Og was Masayim Amos, 200 Amos. So Rabbi Osa, I don't know if you have, I have no commentary whatsoever on this Gemara. I'm going to do some more research, but if you have anything in your commentaries,
200 Amos?
Or any of these numbers, I mean, the whole Gemara, you know, it's on one level, Rabbi Osa, it's very nice that we read through these agadotes, but on a deeper level, what it's, you know, we try to add a little bit. You weren't here, we started a little earlier because a couple of the chevre got here before. What time did the fishing start? I think it's 7:30. Before 7:30. So we went through this whole agadotah about the Ator al Rosh, and we tried to give it a deeper meaning with a Rambam and a writing. Here, I don't know, I'm kind of at loss.
It says that there's Maral, they're more.
Oh, so I guess we'll have to look in the Maral. Which book is that? The Or HaChadosh. Okay. So Or HaChadosh Al Tzion Toyer. We hope that there'll be a light here that the Maral will. So Bli Neder, if I get a chance, I'll look up the Maral. Vayomer La Melech Liester Amalka, Ma Bakashas Malach. I'll read the whole post. Malach Esther Amalku Ma Bakashas Seichad Chatzia Malchus Viseos. So, you know, whenever you see the word Ad, you wonder what that word means. Now, if you take this pasuk literally, Ad Chatzia Malchus means that Ahasuerus was offering Esther on a silver platter half of the Malchus. But Chazal thought that they understood that's impossible. You can't take that literally. A melech in general, and certainly not Ahasuerus, is going to give up half of his Malchus, of his kingdom. But rather, the word Malchus here means is a symbolic reference to something that keeps up the Malchus. And I can't give you that thing which is necessary to keep the Malchus going. In other words, if you're asking for something that's going to undermine the whole Malchus, then that I can't give it. That I can't give to you. And that's the Ad over here, the emphasis on the word Ad. Chatzia Malchus velo kol Malchus. Whatever I can give you, I'll give you. But there's one thing that you can't ask for, because if you ask for that, that represents the antithesis of my malchus. That's going to undermine my malchus. And what is that thing that you might ask for? For lo davar shechotzei tzamalchus. Chotzei tzamalchus can be interpreted in different ways. One way is to say it's be'emtza ha'olam. It's something that is in the middle of the universe, in the middle of the globe. Now, assuming that Ahasuerus, as we discussed earlier, controlled the entire globe, then you have to pinpoint a nekuda, something which is right in the middle of the world. And that's going to be none other than the Beis HaMikdash, which is the middle point of the world. The other interpretation is that the word Malchus means the shilton, the control over the world. And the Maharsha points out here that Ahasuerus was afraid of the Beis HaMikdash. Why? Because he thought that if the Beis HaMikdash would be rebuilt, then the Jewish people would have some sort of a central focal point to rebel against overthrow his Malchus. My Ninu Binyan Beis HaMikdash. So it's an amazing thing to think that someone as powerful as Ahasuerus, who controls the entire world, is afraid of the Beis HaMikdash. And you know, we think in contemporary times, there are Jews who who are ready to build the Beis HaMikdash. I'm not ready yet, but those who are, you know, it really becomes almost like a political, you know, focal point that gathers together the people of Israel in an amazing way.
What do you think? The world against Klal Yisrael.
And that's going to happen as well. And that's why Ahasuerus here can tolerate anything but not the rebuilding of the Beis HaMikdash. I'll just read to you this footnote. He says, Madua Bachara Esther Bederach Zu. Oh, no, I'm sorry. We didn't get to that yet. That's the next line of the Gemara. Fine. Yavo HaMelech V'Homen El HaMishteh. Tana Rabbanon, Ma Rosa Esther Shezimna Es Homon L'Mishteh. Now, this Gemara really breaks down into two different sugyas. One sugya is Bechlal, why did Esther take the approach of a Mishteh? Why did she think that a banquet was the way to achieve a goal? You know, throw a bash, throw a party. And secondly, why did she invite Haman to this party? So the Maharsha explains these two questions are implicit. Number one, Madua Bachar Esther B'derech Zu Shel Mishteh, Kidei Lahatzil Am Yisrael. And number two, Madua Yismina Es Haman. Now, according to the Maharsha, if you want to throw a party, then the more officers in the kingdom, in the king's palace that you invite, the more embellished, the more charming of a party it's going to be. That's called Barov Ham. So he wonders, according to Maharsha's understanding of the question of this Braisa, why does she invite only Haman and not the other members of the court? Obviously, she's got a plan in which something's going to happen here, and Haman's going to be there, and the king is going to be there, and no one else is going to be there. So Rabbi Lezer Omer, we're going to have five different opinions here. Rabbi Lezer Omer, Pachim Tomnalo. She is setting up Pachim. Pachim are, in Hebrew, Michsholot, meaning something that causes you to fall and trip. And her idea is that by creating this banquet, by organizing this banquet, she is going to trip up Haman. Why? Because in general, things go on at a mishteh, especially when you're talking about evildoers, pleasure seekers who are at a mishteh. It brings them to all sorts of pachim, all sorts of michsholos. Shenemar poskin tilim yihishul chanam lifneim lepach. Which is really a tefillah that David HaMelech says he'll make their tables be for them, for the evildoers, an impediment, a pach. So she knew that this would be the viable method through which she could bring about the downfall of Haman. That's according to Rabbi Eliezer. Rabbi Yeshua Omer, mi base of via lomda. This goes back to a previous generation. And what happens over here? This is called Tinoko Shel Beis Rabban, otherwise known as Tashbar. And sometimes when Chazal want to know exactly what to do, they're at a crossroads and they have to make a decision. They turn to the Tashbar, they turn to these children, and they listen to what psukim they're learning and the Malamed is teaching them. And at that particular moment in time, when Esther had to decide what her diplomacy would be, she overheard the Tashbar quoting a pasuk. This is a pasuk in Mishlei. Shenemar, im ra'ev sonachach ileu lechem. If your enemy is hungry, feed him bread. Ki gecholem atachose al rosho. And as a result, you'll be able to pour hot coals over his head. So in this sense, she had a divine inspiration, if you will. It wasn't just her own, you know, calculation of diplomacy. Rabbi Meir Omer, why did she want to create this banquet? How did she expect to defeat Haman? Kidei shelo yitol eitz of the Yimrod. What she was worried about is perhaps Haman had a certain popularity amongst the people, and therefore if she would succeed in getting Achashverosh to repeal the decree, he, Haman, would rise up against the king in a rebellion, and then she would have no recourse to try to get Haman to back down and repeal the Gzeirah. Rabbi Yehuda, Omer, Rabbi Yehuda says this was a ploy, this was a cover-up. Kedesh lo yakiru bashehi Yehudis. A Jewish woman would certainly, the last thing she would do is invite the arch-enemy of the Jewish people, Haman, to a mishneh. Now, of course, she's very nervous here, because if people would find out and the secret would be revealed that she was a Jewess, then how could, then they would, the people would rise up and do whatever they could to stop Esther and prevent her from pleading her case in front of the king. Because, as you know, these provinces were full of our enemies. Now we get to Rabbi Nechemya. I'm going to try to suggest, again, I don't have any notes here on Rabbi Nechemya, maybe you have a note. I'm going to suggest the following, and again, this is Berzon, so take it and leave it out if you don't like it. That Rabbi Nechemya is an extension of Rabbi Yehuda. In other words, Rabbi Nechemya is asking if she, by inviting Haman, is trying to sort of fool the public, you know, that she's not Jewish, which public is she trying to fool? And before we see Rabbi Nechemya, the answer of Yehuda would be, L'chora, that we're talking about the Goyim, that they shouldn't stop her from going into the king when they find out that she's Jewish. So she has to do everything she can to hide her Jewishness. But I think Rabbi Nechemya comes up with a curveball here. Kedei shel yomu Yisrael. The fear here is that the Jewish people would find out that she's Jewish. So she has to do everything she possibly can to cover up for her Jewishness. And what would be so tragic if the Jewish people found out that she was Jewish? And again, you'll ask me the question, well, didn't they know she was Jewish? Like you said, there were two witnesses on the side of Kedushin, right? Achos yesh lanu bebeis hamelech. That sounds good. No, let's calm down the Jewish people. We have a sister. One of our sisters is in the king's court. Oh, no, that's not a good thing. Why? V'yasichu daito menarachet. They won't pray in a profound way. In other words, they'll put all that bitachon in Esther, knowing that she's Jewish, and she'll win the case.
Which is not always a great idea to rely on Jews to help us.
But even if we do rely on Jews, then the question is, are going to go
rely on them, not on
exactly, not on Almighty God. So that's the best I can do with Rabbi Nechemya. Again, if you can improve on that. Yeah, I have a feeling no one understood exactly what Rabbi Nechemya was talking about here. Anyway, Rabbi Yossi Omer, that there's another reason why she would have invited Haman to the suud. And again, keep in mind that Barsha says the Gemara is trying to attack this sugya on two levels. Number one, why the Mishnah? We've had a whole number of answers to that question. Number two, why invite Haman? And again, this might have been a cover-up to indicate that she's not Jewish. And Rabbi Yossi says, Kidei sheyeh matzui lo b'chol eis. She wanted to keep an eye on this guy, Haman. She wanted to make sure that he would be there in the presence of Achashverosh and not sort of run away, because he'll always come up with some excuse. But if he's there at the time, it could make a tremendous impact on Achashverosh seeing Haman and realizing that he's the enemy here. And a hope would be that at this point Achashverosh would issue the decree that Haman should be killed. Okay, now we have another Mandiomer here whose name is Rav Shimon ben Menasya. And he says, Ula Yargish HaMokom V'yasalonu Nes. That what she was trying to do was to encourage, to generate divine compassion. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu therefore would bring about a miracle. Now, why would inviting Haman bring divine compassion? So the Mefarshim explained, and you'll see this in the second shot of Rashi. Rashi's here on the top left. Inami, if you'll see, we'll go back to the first shot of Rashi in a minute. Yargish shani tzricha lahachnif rasha zemezilzul bichvodi. HaKadosh Baruch Hu will empathize with her shifus, with the lowest level that she's reached here. Again, I have pictures in my mind of things that were done during the Nazi Holocaust, right? To lower yourself so low that you have to invite Haman, the arch enemy of the Jewish people, to a Seuda, HaKadosh Baruch Hu will somehow identify with her zilzul, her low level, and that's going to stimulate divine compassion. Again, we're talking in human terms here about the Almighty, but this is just a simple level of pshat. Rashi's first pshat is even more difficult, more challenging. That's why I skipped it. He says, Afani mekareves soneim shel Yisrael, that she's imitating God. God was giving Haman, you know, that moment of glory and power that God gave Haman the ability to achieve his goal and destroy the Jewish people with this decree. And if God is showing his right hand, you know, he's smiling at Haman at this point, I'm also going to do the same thing. I think what Rashi is saying is some sort of imitation of Deo over here, that she is just imitating God. That she really doesn't know why this plan is a good plan. You know, if he asked her to write an essay, why did I invite Haman to the Mishnah? She might not be able to fill in much, but what she can tell is that she's also following in the footsteps of God. And if she's following in the footsteps of God, it's like Xeris HaKosov, is what God does, is what I'm going to do. That's going to bring about a miracle. Reb Shimon Karch Omer, Azbir Lo Panim. She declared, let me show a good face to Haman. And now at this point, that's going to arouse the suspicion and the jealousy perhaps of Ahasuerus. He's going to think that there's something going on here between Esther and Haman, because otherwise, why is she inviting only Haman? Kideshi Yehareg Huvehi, that ultimately she realized that she would be put to death for such an adulterous relationship, and for sure Haman. But the basic goal would be achieved, that Haman would be put to death, and if so, his gzerah would be null annulled. And why is that? Because this was a chok. This was according to the law at that time, that im nerag echad miyotzei ha-melech, if one of the yotzim of the melech, of the council of the king, is put to death, then that person, that person who's now been judged to death, mevatlim is kol gzerosov. They'll completely nullify any decree that he took and issued. So that if she could get to the point where Haman would be put to death, then the gzeru would be automatically batel, be null and void. This is another indication, as we've seen over and over again, how ready Esther was to give up her life. You know, she doesn't even blink about the fact that she'll be put to death, for as long as he'll be put to death. Rav Gamliel says something else. Melech hafach fachan hoya. Achashverus hafach fachan. Miloshen haficha. Haficha means he's very fickle. He changes his mind. You can't rely on him. What he says today, he's mercurical, I think it's cool. Is that such a word? Okay, whatever. Anyway, she was afraid that even if she agrees to get Ahasuerus to decide to kill Haman, to put him to death, and therefore to null and void the decrees, nevertheless, in the meantime, before he gets a chance to put Haman to death, he'll change his mind. And therefore, what she wanted is that Haman would be there, right there, when the king hopefully will decide to put Haman to death. And immediately, without even thinking, they'll put Haman to death. And there'll be no room for rescinding that and changing the mind. Omar Gamliel, and Rav Gamliel adds another word. Adayin tzrichim anu l'modoi. All the above reasons are not sufficient. We have to add one reason, and that's Rav Elazar HaModoi, as to explain why she, Esther, invited Haman to this Suda. And if we have all the reasons above, there's still something that we haven't addressed, which in a minute, we'll talk about that in a minute. And the one who's going to address it, and therefore we desperately need his explanation, is Rabbi Lazar HaModoi. Desanya Rabbi Lazar HaModoi Omer, Kin'atu Bamelech, Kin'atu Basor. Her goal was to create jealousy. Jealousy. Who's going to be jealous? Number one, the king is going to be jealous. And number two, the officers in the king's court will also be jealous. And the key of key here, says Rabbi Lezer HaModoi, is jealousy. She's going to invite Haman to the Suda, Shabbat b'Shabbat, as if he's exactly as great as the king. That's going to generate a lot of jealousy on Ahasuerus' part. Number two, Haman is the only tsar in the entire court that's being invited. That's going to generate a tremendous amount of jealousy amongst the other tsarim, the other members of the court. Now, what exactly is Rabbi Eliezer HaModoi adding here? What question is he answering that we didn't have an answer to until now? Says the Marsha, Kol HaTaim Shehuzkarad Ko, all the other examples above, all the answers and the explanations, Betarzim, they answer why Esther went through a Seuda. But why Esther invited Haman and not other officers, that's not really clear according to any of the answers. And she wants to set up this ambiance of a Mishter, and she feels the Rishon go down, down, down during a Mishter. She wants to show great cover to Haman for whatever reason. But why couldn't she still invite other Sarim? So that's what the explanation of Rabbi Lazar HaModoi is adding here. That since she invited only Haman, then that's going to incur the jealousy of the other officers. Now we had a reason of... Just one second... He says, "V'chein taimo shel Rabba." Okay, we didn't get to Rabba yet. Yishlom de'al yedeshe zuman levado ha'islo gaiva yosek gedol shemisol zei hashever. And Abai v'Rabba, we didn't get to yet. She'es kavnal homan v'gamal amel sheyovo lohem peronias al yedei mishne. All right, so we'll get to that in a minute. But basically what the Gemara is saying is that the key of keys here that we have to understand in terms of Esther inviting Haman is this concept that Rabbi Lezer HaModoi emphasizes of kinah. And that's why she invites Haman and only Haman and not any of the other officers. Now we get to a statement of Rabba and then one of Abaye and Rava. And all of these make sense in the light of Rabbi Eliezer about the jealousy element. Rabbi Amari quotes Poskim Mishlei, Lifnei Shever Gaon.
This also, Rabbi's statement also supports, goes with Rabbi Shimon ben Manasseh, with the Rashi's interpretation that she was behaving like a Kadosh Baruch Hu, that she was kind of following, you know,
following his footsteps.
Because there's the idea that Kadosh Baruch Hu raises up the Russia before they...
Excellent. Beautiful. So the Pasuk in Mishlei says that before a Russia has a mapolet, he goes down, he has a tkuma gdula rabba, he has great greatness. So first he goes up, and the higher up you go, the deeper the fall, the more profound the fall is. And therefore, if a Russia can have a gedula, then the hope is that that's the last gedula that he's having, and then after he experiences that greatness, he's going to fall down all the way down to the bottom. So Esther brings Haman to this level of gedula, so that immediately he would have hapala. And that explains again why she doesn't invite any of the other officers. She's not interested in building up any of the other officers. Now she just wants to get Haman's gzera annulled. By Varava the Amin Chavayu, the reason why Haman was singularly invited by Esther to the Mishter is because when it comes to Peronios HaRishoyim, is Peronios, the downfall of Rishon comes about through drinking. And that's based on a pasuk in Yirmiyahu. And Navi says, "Bechumam ashis es mishtehem." So there's a certain heat. The heat here, I think, is a reference to people acting impassionately and irrationally because they're overtaken by a certain heat of the moment as a result of the mishta, the drinking. The pasuk continues. I'll read it here. It says, "Vehish kartiv ilashon shikur," to get intoxicated. So that they'll be killed, they'll die, and they won't have any tkuma, they won't wake up.
This would be a great place for how to pray, because you could read it the chumam as haman, right? The chet and the hay and the mem and the nun are teaching.
Right. So he says the following: Achavin sheyu yemei mishta shel shon be'eis hachom. So the body heats up as a result of this military campaign. When they come back, lishtos, to drink wine, v'shtaku, and they get drunk, will be osa lailo nerag Belshazzar. And she was aware of the fact that as a result of this yayin, Belshazzar was killed. Hare, we see, says Esther, she mishta rishon mevi aleihem poronim. So that's going to bring the downfall of the rishon. And just to finish up this sugya, we'll continue bleeding at it tomorrow. Ashkechei rava baravu al elio. And I assume we're talking about Eliyahu HaNavi here, so Rabbah meets Eliyahu. Where did she see some sort of a precursor, so to speak, to set the pattern and know that she should invite Haman to the Mishnah? So Eliyahu's response to Rabbah was, "Kekulu Tanoi uKekulu Amoroi." All the reasons above that we gave, the name of Tanoi and the name of Aron, they're all true. They all form one whole. So bleed in tomorrow, we'll pick it up. Vayisaper lahem Haman is quoted Osho. And again, we'll have 50 different opinions how many children Haman had.
This cites the Marsha, so that the last point with the last verse of Belshazzar, that she was also hoping that Ahasuerus would fall as well as Haman. That wouldn't just be wouldn't she invited the two of them and both of them, that type of verse, since it refers to Belshazzar for to a king, that this would actually be a downfall for both Haman and Ahasuerus.
I didn't understand that way. Until now I understood that she was just trying to get Haman down. You say she also wanted to get Ahasuerus down.